Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlatnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome back my really good friend, Paul Moore. Hey, Paul.
Hey, great to see you, Mike. How you been?
I'm awesome. Thank you for coming. Paul hails from Wellings Capital. He's a co-founder and I guess your CEO, chairman, president. I don't even know your title, but majority. And they do a lot of great pref equity deals, and we'll talk about that. Also, Paul does a lot of interesting research out there. So I know you told me right before we started this whole recording, you're going to talk about latest and greatest in the market. Before we do that, any other news with Paul? What's going on in the life of Paul Moore? Anything new and exciting?
I got my last one out of high school. So I've got a daughter who's a freshman in college, then three more older kids as well. And we're together for 10 days this month. And you know, it's not as fun. It's not always as fun as you imagine it, because, you know, once we're all sitting around the dinner table, you know, that fantasy world of happy kids all getting along, like, it's not always exactly that way. So I don't know about you, but you know, kids are still kids and we're still adults, and we had a good time overall. But you know, the kids, two of them are back on the West Coast, and we're settling back into mostly empty nesterism now. I just made up that word.
Well, that's a wonderful word, and you do the best you can to be in touch with your kids, being engaged. I have the same thing. I have four kids too. So
yeah,
the oldest one is in vet school and the youngest one is in middle school. So I know how it goes. It's just different needs, and you just try to pull them away from the cell phone or wireless phone or smartphone and get them to do something else. And right. I like this. We correct the joke right before this. You said you have an old football injury. You have a headache from that. And I have my own joke. I have my headache from an old sports injury too, from chess.
Oh, from chess. Well, that must be a head injury as well.
Yeah, you get to think too much. So
yeah, right.
You get a headache from that. That's anyway, great. let's get back to real estate. So let's start with the economic environment. And you've done a bunch of research. You have some fresh data. Would love to hear some of the recent news or developments or research that you've done. Talk to me a little bit about what's going on out there.
Yeah, well, you know, we've been hearing about these, hopefully, you know, the market had priced in six or seven rate cuts in 2024 based on Chairman Powell's comments in November or so. And now here we are almost to the middle of the year with none. Of course, we know why. With, you know, persistent inflation. But, you know, the higher for longer mantra, you know, some people are joking around about higher forever. Of course, that's not going to be the case. But in syndicators, you know, who have been talking about survive till 25, some of them are just talking about surviving at all right now. And of course, we're talking about syndicators who used risky short-term floating rate debt and never dreamed that interest rates would spike like they did between March of 2022 and summer of 2023. But anyway, those things are not necessarily subsiding yet, which means people are still paying a pretty penny for, you know, floating rate caps and refinances. And as some of these deals are coming, you know, hitting the end of their floating rate debt period, or, you know, they have to be refinanced. A lot of these, you know, assets have dropped, you know, we've heard 12 to 18 and up to 30% in value. And there could even be more destruction ahead. And what I want to point out, Mike, is, and we'll get into this in a minute if we have time, it's not the macroeconomics of multifamily that's causing a problem. And it's not generally the assets themselves that are the problem. It's the financing on the assets. It's folks who might have overpaid. You know, they might have stretched the cap rate. They might have, gone in for, you know, that risky short-term debt just to make sure they got the deal done. And all those types of financing issues, aggressive underwriting assumptions, unexpected increase in costs, which of course include insurance right now. These things, lower than expected rent growth, all that stuff's combining to kill a lot of these deals. But it's not the assets themselves. There's still very strong occupancy and very strong demand for multifamily housing. And it's actually, the research I've done has shown that's much stronger than I even dreamed.
Thank you for sharing all that and a lot of great nuggets. So I'll just add a couple of comments on this front. So everything you said makes sense. We've seen data pointing out to very low transaction volume and valuation correction somewhere in the, let's call them 16 to 20% on average. I've heard some folks talk about as high as 30%, and in some other markets it's down 10 to 15%. But higher for longer rates for sure creating financial challenges on the new acquisition and refinances. The result, valuation softened up, as simple as that. Of course, floating rate debt is taking it on the chin with a higher federal funds rate and SOFR and all that stuff. So all that stuff makes a lot of sense. The fundamentals are still very solid, but the financial conditions are very difficult. So, and then if improperly capitalized deals need more liquidity. This is the kind of the primary challenge today. Survive until 25 statement is gone. Now it's survive until 26. From what I've seen recently, again, this is my view and I don't know whether I'm right or wrong. Your guess is as good as mine. I don't claim to know anything other than there's some projections of market bottoming out somewhere middle of next year, early maybe to middle of 2025 as the absolute floor of multifamily. But who knows, right? We don't know any of this stuff.
Yeah, who knows?
So, but the opportunities are there. So what are you seeing today? Are you transacting? Are you able to pick up new deals in this environment? Are you able to inject capital in the existing deals kind of as a rescue and recovery capital? We're doing quite a bit of rescue and recovery capital in the form of mass financing. We're finding that opportunity to be the best opportunity today because the deals to find a great deep discount new transaction is very hard. It's crazy as it sounds. Yeah. So it's like a low volume, nothing's happening. What do you deploy cash for? Are you seeing new deals at great prices where you can inject preferred equity?
Yeah, if it's possible, I'm going to answer a few of those comment on a few of your comments along the way, then finally get back to your question. And if I forget your question, please remind me. But right now, the current tight lending environment, high interest rates, cooled off investor base, you know, equity investor base has resulted in a 50% drop in multifamily starts. And this 50% drop is exacerbating an already significant shortfall. The National Multifamily Housing Council reports that there's about a 600,000 unit shortfall that's persisted since the great financial crisis. And we're talking about multifamily units. Even though we've had record deliveries in the last 6 months or so, the new starts are very, very low. And so with immigration and the hesitancy of the younger generations to buy, and with this massive delta now between rental costs and ownership costs, and that delta being reported as between $700 and $800 a month and up to $1,000 a month, and in some markets, $2,000 a month difference, folks are generally tending to rent versus buy right now. In fact, two REITs, Avalon Bay and Camden, on their first quarter earnings calls said that they had a shocking low percentage of move-outs in the first quarter of 2024 due to people buying a house. Camden said 9.4% of their move-outs in the first quarter were attributed to residents buying a home. That's the lowest in their history. Avalon Bay said only 7% of their residents moved out in the first quarter to buy a home, and it's usually 16 to 17%. So, I mean, all this is, you know, again, with these low starts, high demand, slowing down supply. We're seeing a tremendous macroeconomic opportunity. In fact, it's reported that by 2035, the U.S. needs to build 4.3 million more apartment units by 2035 to meet the demand. And honestly, Mike, I just don't see it happening. So, and especially with home ownership, which could be partly temporary, being so much more expensive than renting, it seems like rents might have more upward pressure on them. Occupancy might continue to have upward pressure. And, you know, if that's true, you can see why, number one, we're not seeing the screaming deals we saw from the foreclosures and the deals that have fallen out like we did in 2008 to 12. And number two, we've got massive hundreds of billions of dollars sitting on the sidelines for 2 years right now that needs to be deployed. And you would expect that it's being deployed. Why isn't it being deployed? Well, it is. Blackstone has made two large moves, including one at the beginning of April this year. They deployed $10 billion into AIR communities, which is a stabilized multifamily community. And they made a specific comment on their rate call, excuse me, their first quarterly earnings call, that they don't care if interest rates are going to go down in 60 to 90 to 180 days. They said the opportunity with higher interest rates, actually, as a long-term holder, Blackstone said, we're better off buying at a slightly better price right now than holding off until interest rates drop. And as a long-term holder with long-term fixed rate debt and a long holding period, they said, you know, that the opportunity to get a better deal is more important to them right now than getting better financing. And so Blackstone's move has, you know, you mentioned the bottom of the cycle being 2025 or six. You know, Howard Marks reminds us, you know, we can't really predict where a cycle is going to bottom out. And of course, you and I know that. But some people think that Blackstone's moves this first and second quarter already might be signaling, you know, maybe getting close to the bottom of that cycle, but who knows? Wellings Capital has come up with five different ways to invest in this market cycle, but I've talked enough. I thought I'd give you a chance to comment on what I just said, and we'll get back to those five different ways that we're investing right now.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Would love to hear those five ways, and then I'll just add a couple of quick comments. So I've heard this same line of reasoning and thinking that the high interest rates are absolutely killing construction starts, and then they are killing future supply. So that there's a massive demand today, and then there's further demand growth in the housing units, but the supply, new construction, is constrained by the higher for longer rates. No question about that. So in the future, this creates a great view on the supply-demand imbalance. As a result, further rent inflation. And by the way, it's one of the major dilemmas of the Federal Reserve is the fact that these higher interest rates that they're keeping, they're actually not really working to fight inflation the way they envision. And one of the challenges is exactly what you mentioned. What is the cure for the called high prices or high anything? It's the high prices, and it's supposed to stimulate new supply, but the new supply is being disincentivized because of the higher rates. So I'll just add
Exactly.
that comment. So let's go back to your five, because it's your show, and I would love to hear your thoughts and inputs. So what are your five ways to invest in this environment? And then, by the way, one more comment on the bottom of the market. I sincerely hope you're right, and the Blackstone is right that we are approaching the bottom. But there are different opinions, and we don't know this. Catching
Right.
a dropping knife or trying to find a bottom is incredibly difficult.
Yeah, very.
My view on this whole topic is correction has been already big enough that it's the time to come in into many of these deals today. You don't need to sit and wait. You can participate. You just got to
Right.
participate in a more defensive strategy, the way you do it and the way we're doing it today, in the form, instead of doing common equity, do preferred equity or do mezz debt or mezz
Yeah.
participation where the level of risk is lower. That's my view, how you enter today, and you don't
Yeah.
wait for the market to show a clear button and a clear recovery.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you like me to go through these one at a time or just
Yeah,
blurt out all
go through
five?
five. Go through one through five, and then
Okay, great.
go ahead.
So my first thought, I've already touched on it, and that's invest with a long-term horizon in mind. So, we can look at these multifamily demand and supply numbers. We can look out 11 years if the NMHC is right that we need, millions of new units. Increasing immigration, is maybe even driving even more. And with this 50% recent decrease in multifamily starts, with this all these different factors I mentioned, a long-term view is something I recommend. Blackstone has already said that, and in fact they said that their long-term view is driving them to plant seeds of future long-term value now by acquiring assets. Now the long-term view also includes acquiring typically long-term, typically fixed rate debt, maybe 7, 10, 12 year debt. And that's, the way we look at things as well. So we typically don't invest in floating rate debt deals, although we have some, done some, we typically tend more toward the long term. So point one would be invest with a long-term view. Point two would be invest in recession-resistant asset types. Now, I think multifamily, especially with the macroeconomics we just discussed, is one of those asset types. Another type is manufactured housing communities or mobile home parks. Newmark recently reported that the number of affordable units with rents less than $1,000 a month declined by 4.7 million between 2015 and 2020, and that trend is continuing today. So we think mobile home parks are a great potential opportunity. It's the only asset type, Mike, that I know of that has decreasing supply and increasing demand every year. And right now, to Blackstone's point again, with debt and equity sort of cooling off, sitting on the sidelines, it means that sometimes you can get even better deals. Here's an example. One of our operating partners made an offer on a pair of mobile home parks in Detroit for of $5 million, which was a really low price for, I think it was 300, 400 plus units, 400 plus, yeah, in 2023. The owner turned it down, as I would have as well, but the owner said, "I want to get a better price." He put it on an auction site, an online auction site. Well, by the time he had it on the auction site, the market had cooled even further now into 2024. And remember, he had offered 5 million on it and was turned down. He bought it on the auction site for 3.1 million, $8,500 per site, which is, about a quarter of the going rate for mobile home park sites in general. And so, and furthermore, once he got in there, he identified one strategy alone. Remember, he paid 3.1 million, one strategy alone to raise the value by $5 million without raising rents at all. And it had to do with utility, poorly managed utilities, water leaks, et cetera. So pretty powerful when you can get, recession-resistant assets, and even more powerful when you can get them in a time when debt and equity is somewhat on the sidelines. So my third way of investing right now would be to shift your place in the capital stack. And we've talked about that before. Investing in mezz debt and preferred equity, to me, is the place to be right now if you really want superior risk-adjusted returns. The last deal we did was last Wednesday. A week ago, we rolled out a $6.5 million investment opportunity to investors. We were hoping to raise 4.5 to 5.5 million in about 10 days. We had almost 6 million in commitments in less than 24 hours for this preferred equity deal. This deal pays net to investors 6.5 to 8% ongoing yield and 14 to 15% total annual return. Of course, there's no guarantee these type of returns will be achieved, and this has already closed anyway. But that's, you know, and again, with a personal guarantee and a better place in the capital stack, you know, we're not getting unlimited upside like common equity, but we are getting a more likely opportunity to get our capital back and achieve the targeted returns. A fourth way to invest right now would be in special situations. And specifically, I'm talking about tax abated assets. Like multifamily in Texas and New Jersey, we've invested in opportunities that have tax abatement strategies. One of them, the tax abatement allowed an over, basically the asset was acquired for $80 million, but it was appraised at $113 million the next day because the taxes were abated for 99 years. Property taxes in Texas are high. And that created a very nice margin of safety in regard to debt service coverage ratio. And the $26 million in equity at acquisition now has, you know, theoretically, at least on paper, a very nice appreciation play in day one, on day one. And then the fifth way to invest in any economy is based on Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett. They said that they never had a significant conversation in 60 years of investing together about the economy. They never talked about the economy when making an investment. They were just looking for durable assets managed by great managers and buying them well below the intrinsic value. So the fifth way to invest right now or anytime is getting deals with a lot of intrinsic value. I talked about the mobile home park a minute ago. Think about the intrinsic value. When you can buy an asset for $3.1 million and you can find one value add that, you know, potentially achieves an on-paper appreciation of $5 million just by fixing the utilities, that's pretty powerful. When you can do that, you can invest well in any market, any economy, this one or any other.
Thank you, Paul, for sharing these great wisdoms. I certainly agree with many of them, and I'll just add a couple of comments. And so, mass debt, pref equity, you're preaching to the choir. So I certainly love the strategy. This is what the what we consider hottest strategy of 24. Because you can participate with, I use this term, equity-like returns without equity-like risk. You can participate in these deals. And if you combine that with a fifth point that you mentioned, which is I call deep buy. Yeah, you're basically buying at a great intrinsic value. So you're buying well below what the intrinsic value is, what the fair market value is. Now, these are not easy to find. Deep buys in real estate always exist because it is not an efficient market. And one person can get a great deal while the other one cannot because information doesn't travel freely. It's not a publicly traded.
Right.
Private real estate is very inefficient, has a lot of power, and you can get into deep buys. So we are completely in agreement. That concept makes a lot of sense. And at the end of the day, today, in this environment, if you can pick up a deal off the market with special circumstances for the seller and then layer that with a great capital stack, it's a very different experience versus a few years ago. So we started the whole episode with the market having corrected from, let's just call it mid-2022, when the interest rates were very low, to where it is today because the rates went higher for longer and it caused all kinds of issues. Now it's the reverse is true. The rates appear to be high on a cyclical basis. Now, again, if you have long-term horizon, which is your point number one, and you combine that with basically Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett intrinsic value exercise, you're not buying for a short time span, you're buying for a long time span. So from that perspective, you're not as concerned with the immediate circumstances. But if you layer that with the high interest rates today, the good old wisdom that I learned many, many years ago, buy when the rates are high and refinance when the rates are low. So if you buy today, as long as you don't have massive prepayment penalties, you could always refinance when the rates fall. So from that perspective, you're creating safety, downside protection with fixed rates. You're buying with safety in the form of, call it, great intrinsic value. And then obviously, if you're also participating in these deals in the form of preferred equity or mass financing, you're taking another layer of safety. So that's why today, this whole game, which was very hot and attractive couple of years ago, and now a lot of people are shying away because they're nervous because they wrote checks a couple of years ago and they're not sure what's going to happen with these investments. But the contrarian thinking needs to kick in today. Now is a great opportunity versus a couple of years ago. And of course, we feel the pain for the checks written a couple of years ago. But today, it's a very different environment. Even if you only take long-term perspective, because the market has seen a black swan event. We've never seen the rates change this fast. The slope of the change was so dramatic that the market is still shaking through and adjusting. But that's the point, that these rates can't really go much higher. We're already at a pretty high level. And and if the Fed doesn't cut them anytime soon, call it higher for longer or higher or forever. I don't know whether forever is a possibility here. At some point, the U.S. economy can't really afford these interest rates unless, unless of course, inflation gets to be very high. And that is, by the way, it's one more comment I wanted to add, and then I'll back to you. The best way to fight inflation is not with a monetary policy, but with a fiscal policy. You can't fight inflation by printing money like there is no tomorrow and then forcing rates higher to fight the inflation. That doesn't really work, and we're seeing it right now. We're seeing sticky inflation because fiscal policy has to be under control ahead of the monetary policy. Monetary policy helps, but it's not the only way to try to fight fiscal irresponsibility. That's my two cents. Anyway, back to you. So,
no, I agree. And, you know, the I know that you have been a fan of preferred, or excuse me, mezzanine debt, and you're seeing high coupon rates. We're seeing high coupon rates with preferred equity. It's ironic, Mike, that high interest rates are compressing common equity returns. They're compressing the amount of debt and equity, common equity that are available, and they're increasing the opportunity and the returns for mezz debt and preferred equity. And that's why we think this is the best risk-adjusted seat to be in right now. What do you think?
I agree. We actually have a presentation we're working on right now, and we'll make it available. But we pulled a bunch of data. And one of the data that we pulled, amount of mass financing, and that amount has been shrinking over many years since 2008 crisis. It's been consistently coming down, down, down. The need for it was not there, or was smaller need. In essence, the banks were lending with very low interest rates, and the LTVs were higher and higher and higher. The loose lending brought situations where the banks were lending 75, 80%, in some cases even aggressively, sometimes 85, 90%. So the common equity raise was small and was easy to raise. Who needed mezz, right? Nobody needed mezz. The pendulum swung all the way to the other side. So we're seeing banks lending 60%, 55%, incredibly tight, 65% in extreme cases on a very conservative deal. And the equity raise has got way, way harder. So what to do? How do you get these deals closed? That's where the pref equity comes in, or mass financing. So the increase in volume in mass type of financing has spiked tremendously over the last year, and it's continuing to grow because of very fast dislocation on the market and the bank's credit being very tight. The other really interesting fact that we picked up, banks lending fell drastically, almost 50%. In the last 12 months, is a huge drop in bank lending, and a private credit has stepped in. A lot of the private credit, either they're doing the first or they're doing mass, where the banks are only doing a smaller proportion of a loan. So the opportunity is tremendous, at least from what I see. How would folks reach out to you? You got some really interesting pref equity deals coming up, and you'll have more in the future. And you have a great investment philosophy you and I share. We love Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, and we're not perfect. We're human. We make mistakes too, but we try to learn and we try to get better. And we're certainly seeing great opportunity ahead. So how would folks reach out to you and learn a little more?
Yeah, they can reach out at our website, Wellings Capital. That's WELLINGS, wellingscapital.com. If they want a free special report on mobile home park investing, commercial real estate in general, self-storage and more, they can go to wellingscapital.com/resources.
Thank you, Paul. And final comment, very quickly, would you recommend a book or a podcast to listen to? Just something that comes to mind. Anything?
Yeah, I've fantastic book is called Richer, Wiser, Happier by William Green. Charlie Munger was featured in the last chapter.
I read the book. Yeah, it's one of my
favorite books. Isn't it great? And Charlie said it was one of the greatest investment books ever written. And Green is just incredibly humble in this book and on his podcast as well. He's got a Richer, Wiser, Happier podcast that's also part of the TIP, the Investors Podcast Network. I recommend both. And of course, I recommend the Big Mike Podcast.
Well, thank you so much. So much wisdom. And your book recommendation is an A plus on my list. I've listened to the book more than once, and I'm going to continue to do it again. Good books are worth listening and reading again and again. So that's an awesome book.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks, Mike. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing, Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.